Mo Hickey and his colleague Tanya Knauer join me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So now, Mo, let's just talk briefly about your decision. What happens from here, on July 1st?
Actually, we have a policy that dictates this whole process. So the first part of the process, obviously, is that we're moving to Park Meadows at the end of June full-time, and so I'll be outside of my precinct, so that necessitates my resignation. The next step in the process is the board will accept interested applicants, and they can do that at any time between now, starting now till June 30th. And then I'm doing this off the top of my head. I believe the appointment has to be made within 14 days after June 30th, no later. And I think it's the county council then is allowed to appoint the person. It's an
if
the school board doesn't. It's an old policy, so which I don't think will be a problem. So anyone that's in my precinct, you have to have been a permanent resident for a year in the precinct. And it also includes parts of Thanes Canyon. Actually, Thanes Canyon's included in it. So it's Thanes Canyon, Old Town, Lower Deer Valley, Upper Deer Valley, and Prospector. So board will accept the applicants, and then the board appoints that person till the next general election, which would have been my cycle, which is November 2016, and then it would be an open position on the ballot.
All right. So, Tanya, as you look at applicants, are you going to be looking for somebody interested in running for re-election?
Well, that would certainly be a question, because I'm sure Mo can attest to this. There really is a 1 to 2 year kind of period where you need to get your feet wet in terms of learning our policies and being on the board and the process and all of that other stuff. So no doubt we don't really want to have somebody who's just going to be around for 2 years, but they'll have to run like anyone else. So if somebody else obviously puts their name in the hat in, I guess it's March or April or whenever the filing period is of 2016, then obviously they would be on the ballot as well. So we'll see. I mean, we've appointed in the past. I believe that Michael Boyle was originally appointed.
Michael was appointed for Charles. And then Charles had the similar situation as I have, and then Charles ran again in his new precinct. So Michael ran against Charles and then was appointed when Charles moved out of his precinct. So again, it's a little over a year appointment, which is a learning curve.
Yeah.
I think the biggest concern from the board would be more the person's knowledge of what goes on in the district and how much of a learning curve there would be. And you hope you get some good applicants, and I think we will.
Yeah. Well, you ran unopposed, though. Both terms, maybe.
Yes, both terms. So,
given kind of the second homeowner portion of Deer Valley, Old Town, do we really have full-time, year-round residents who have lived here for a year?
I think Prospector is a great neighborhood to pull from. It's not like the other neighborhoods aren't great and we wouldn't love from them, but Prospector has a ton of families. 40% or something like that of McPullen comes from Prospector. So, there's a lot of people over there that have been involved in the schools for, quite a while. So I'm hoping that there's a population over there that is interested.
All right. Any idea? People can just send a letter of intent what do they need to do?
Well, okay, since this happened yesterday, we don't really, we haven't outlined a process yet, but there is no doubt we're going to sit down and talk about, we definitely want to do some advertising and get the word out. We'll make an opportunity for people to call if they have any questions. We'll figure this out and we'll get it to you.
Okay, and we'll be happy to spread that information then. Regarding the Master Planning Committee update, Roy Murphy gave a quick update. Basically, the Master Planning Committee has been on hold until that grade realignment decision took place. Now they can start to move ahead. So what's next for the Master Planning Committee? We've got the grade realignment. We've got the full-day kindergarten figured out. Now we just need to, figure out some priorities in terms of what we do first?
Okay, so just to clear up that the master planning is doesn't determine where we put students. Really, it's determining the needs of the district, and then the master planning comes in and determines how, from a facilities perspective, we're going to provide that. So that's really why the master planning committee was kind of stalling out until we really kind of evaluated this whole realignment thing and see if it made the best sense, which I think based on community meetings and meetings with staff and, you know, really 2 months of just lots of discussion, it always seemed to come to the top as really kind of the best solution to resolve a lot of the things that we're looking at. So as far as next steps, we had a great workshop, right, where we had like 60 community members come in, and it was retired people, it was parents, it was high school students, staff, administration, everything. And they split them up kind of evenly at all the different tables, so it wasn't just all students, just, you know, just staff. And there was a lot of brainstorming going on, big maps out there, and just get people's ideas of what they think the Kearns campus needs to look like, because that's really the area we need to focus our effort on in terms of putting together a blueprint. I mean, we do need to figure out where a fifth, sixth school is going to go as well, but it's really the big blueprint that we're sort of starting with, if that makes any sense.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the decision then, about what it means then from here with the grade realignment. Do we have enough room at our elementary schools to take in all of the preschool and full-day kindergarten students?
We do, and you know, one of the tricky parts of grade, not just grade realignment, more so the master planning, is, you know, the boundaries come into the discussion point, you know, the open enrollment in the state of Utah. So we've taken all this into consideration. So we'll have room to expand in the preschool and the all-day kindergarten. The superintendent also mentioned last night that we'll be actually going down to a one-to-one in fourth grade and to third grade next year because of computers being available, which will free up some more rooms in our elementary schools from the labs that are currently hosting computers. So I think we have a good length of time for the elementary schools, given that grade realignment.
Part of the whole decision, though, was to keep the number of elementary schools as it is, and maybe add on portable classrooms if you actually had to. And the reason behind that, given that if you build a new elementary school, then you've got to fill it up. But all of a sudden, now you've got to funnel it into the middle school and junior high school. And
right,
that's where some of the crunch was.
It's exactly what it is. When you look at our middle school, our secondary grades, they're all running right around either close to 400 or over 400. So just putting an elementary school out there to throw more grades, you know, down into our secondaries later on didn't really seem to make a whole lot of sense. So this, and again, we are a little very sensitive about putting out an elementary school and just having it be filled up with out-of-boundary people that are costing us a lot of money. So we felt like this was a kind of a win-win in terms of addressing our long list of needs as well as issues.
Oh, the fifth, sixth thing, you know, we've talked about maybe a new school, maybe an addition onto Ecker Hill or a different pod there. Also talk about putting the kids into Treasure Mountain for a while. If Treasure Mountain is actually used, we've got 10 years left on the building, but do we need to dump $1 million into it now to make it inhabitable? Or
That's always been the question, and it would be more than $1 million.
Way more.
And we're also, as we talked about last night, working with the EPA on the soil remediation on Kearns Boulevard. So there's a lot of factors. It would be a safe environment probably for a year without putting any more money into it. But we're already looking at, we've had leaks this year in the building. We've had, I think, one classroom flooded in the building this year. So
Roof issues, it goes on and on.
We could get by and get by safely, which is the key part, you know, for 1 year out. After that, as you pointed out, you're starting to throw good money after a bad building. So, you know, I think that's a short-term solution.
So we've got about $60,000 going into the retrofit for the PC caps into the library. We know we need a new school or a new building of some sort. I mean, what are we? Do you have a total price tag then on what needs to happen in the addition at the high school as well?
Not at all.
No.
And our next workshop, which is May 14th, is VCBO has been tasked to come back with some options based on the input that they received at our last workshop. And by the way, the input is very interesting, with six very different groups working and not working together. I would say there was like 80% overlap in terms of what people think we should do. And it's funny, none of it puts a school back at Treasure Mountain.
Right.
It puts, you know, fields and other types of things. So our next project is really to look at some options again, maybe a 5-6 at Bear Hollow, including it at Ecker, and then start putting some really high-level costs on that kind of stuff so we can get an idea what we're looking at. I mean, because our needs aren't only the schools. I mean, we have a gym that is sort of past its prime as well. It's due date. There you go. We've got, you know, in a great music program, you know, that we need to have some better space for that, and CTE. So, and we've got a district office. The high school currently, when it does SAT, ACT, AP testing, goes over to the LDS church. We don't have a place to do that. So we're looking at a lot of different needs for the district, and it's really a matter of prioritizing them and then trying to put some price tags and figuring out what we can do.
Yeah, but just ballpark. I mean, are we up to $19 million already, just on what we've talked about?
Oh, we're way past $19
million. In the conversation. And one key point on that, and this is something I just cautioned because we've seen it. There's sort of three steps to the master planning process. So the first one was now the conceptual, which is the grade realignment. Now we're past conceptual. It's a fact. Next is identifying the price. And Todd Howard has been great to work with, but there's basically a formula for if you're building a high school, this is the square foot cost. If you're building a middle school, this is the square foot cost. So we should be able to come back, and that encompasses programmatic needs in that price. So we should be able to get a ballpark price for each one of these components within a very short period of time. And what people have to understand is that's the second step. The third step is how you actually program it, which becomes a lot more of an administrative issue with community input. So as Tanya brought up all those points, you know, do we need a new gym? Do we add on an open space in the high school for testing and multipurpose use? Those are the factors that start coming in the third step of the process.
Well, you've just made the case that we do need to bond then. So when does that decision get made?
If we bond, and again, the process would be the board would decide in June to move forward on the bond if we have all the information at that time, and then the bond would be on the ballot in November of 2015.
All right. Back to the PC Caps deal. As we've reported, of course, that's ongoing, that renovation work so that we can get the kids in for this upcoming school year. You were such an advocate of PC Caps being separate. So what changed? I mean, why is it okay now to have it on campus?
I still don't think it's I don't think it's the ideal situation, but we're looking at a real estate market in Park City that's gone through the roof recently, especially on the commercial side. There's very few spaces available. Our current landlord had a good opportunity to bring in a new tenant at a much higher price than we were willing to. It's not a bad situation. It's just some of the constraints, which we talked about last night, for example, we have over 120 business partners. We don't want to be dragging them through the high school and parking over someplace else. So as we look at master planning, I think there's better alternatives. It will still be its own separate space in the media center at the high school for the short term. But as we look going farther, I think there's a lot of great opportunities to have it on the campus, but have it slightly separate from the high school.
Yeah, but we're moving the learning center, I thought, over to the high school, so why not just put it there?
That's one of the possibilities that could come out. We've talked about, I mean, at the workshop last week, some of the ideas were to turn the learning center into the tech department, because the tech department's still in the basement of the district office. We've already had one leak there. Don't want to have another one. We've moved all our servers out, but we still have some technology there. So that's really the stage we're at right now is, okay, as Tanya mentioned, let's prioritize our needs, and then where should it be located?
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the budget. You, with projected growth next year, you're looking at an additional 130 students, and we're talking about adding 8 full-time employees to deal with those 130 students? That seems like a lot of staff for 130 kids.
Well, it's a combination. We're backfilling from last year as well. So last year we had a higher growth than we expected. We had over 200 new students. So we've heard throughout the year, both from the Teachers Association and from parents, we've had large classes the past year. So we're taking the excess that we had in the 14-15 school year, adding it to what we're anticipating for the 15-16 school year. And we're still, in some cases, not going to get down to what the district target has been over the years. So it's just been an unbelievable period of growth. It's the largest 3-year growth period that the district has seen in terms of percentage. So it's been difficult to manage. The argument could be made that we might need more staff if we have pockets, and that's the hard part to predict right now. We know we're anticipating 130 students, but where are those 130 students going to show up?
Right. With the fact, though, I mean, you've been through this exercise already. You know, we saw when things, you know, drop out, you need to start making cuts. I mean, are you still following kind of that lean and mean, you know, order of operations that you were on before?
I mean, I think so. I think what Todd did last night, and there was a couple of things in the budget numbers, if I could just highlight one thing because it's an annoying factor more than anything else, is, you know, the state came out and said they raised the WPU 4%. In reality, for Park City, the increase in the WPU net winds up being about 1.6% because they also added the charter school replacement tax and increased Park City's contribution to that. So we actually lost about $480,000 for the charter school replacement tax. And it doesn't necessarily go to charter schools in Park City, by the way. It goes into the pot, which is even more frustrating. So charter schools aren't getting any new money out of this. It's the legislature's taking less money out of their funds. We can talk about that another day. But we're looking at it, and if you look at the spreadsheet that Todd used last night, he did a great job of these are one-time money and these are ongoing money. So we've looked at our budget completely and said, okay, if we include these new teachers, this is the amount of one-time money we have available. This is the type of ongoing money we have. And we're looking at both in combination and saying, okay, ongoing money is something we should use for the operations of the school. The one-time money, we have to have a deeper discussion internally and say, okay, if we need to spend a little bit of this, how much is appropriate and how sustainable are we in terms of our goal of keeping the 2 months in reserve as we move forward. Right now, we're in good shape as far as that goes, but you definitely have to monitor those expenses as you move forward. And the problem is, for every new student we get, we don't get the equivalent of what we spend on a student. Between the combination of the WPU being so low in the state of Utah, as we know, and the fact that you'd have to have a $4.3 million primary residence to cover the cost of one child on the tax base, it's not a good combination, right, as far as financially.
So yeah, the other thing is that one-time money, just to add on there, as we're looking at trying to implement all of these program changes in the fall of 2016, it's going to cost us capital money, but it's also going to cost us M&O money. So, I mean, we have to look at, you know, that whole area that we're headed and make sure that we've got some in reserve to accommodate for paying for some of those changes.
And you still don't have teacher negotiations resolved. So, I mean, are we looking at another tax increase?
I don't think so. I mean, I think at some point it always has to be on the table, but I don't think it's in the next couple of years. I don't think so. And you know, that allows for a lot of things to happen in the interim.
Okay, I need to leave it at that. Tanya, Mo, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
It's 8:34. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Snyderville Planning Commission last night voted on a recommendation for a new trailhead on the Silver Summit Parkway just east of the LDS Church. They also chose Mike Franklin as their new chairman and Bea Peck as their vice chairman. She joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So is that just a year, 1 year term?
Yes, 1 year.
Okay. Any goals that you've got as vice chairperson?
Well, we're going to be looking at the development code starting very shortly. We finished up our job with revising the general plan. That's now before the council. And I think within the next couple of weeks, we'll start our job of revising, reviewing, and going through the process with the upgrade of the development code. So that's I serve on that subcommittee, so that probably is one of my primary goals.
All right. With regard to the trailhead, your view of the critics who said that the trail isn't needed, that we're paving paradise.
Paving paradise. I think their concerns were certainly heartfelt, and what I got out of their concerns was redundancy, and whether or not an additional trailhead would have some sort of adverse impact on the elk herd that's there, and I'll address that first. It seems that the plans for the trailhead with an additional berming, the creation of a protected zone in the sensitive areas where the elk seem to primarily gather, rest, feed. It looked like Basin Rec Trails and Utah Open Lands had taken a long, hard look at that. And I think there'll be some restrictions in that area that's also going to try to protect the elk herd as well. As far as redundancy, I can appreciate that they felt that Trailside, the bike park, and even use of the LDS church was available. I frankly think the LDS church is private property. I don't know that we could impose that. But the use of Trailside, I think the trail committee felt there's a need. I think they've been doing a study on this for a number of years, and though I appreciate their conclusions and those of the neighbors, they respectfully disagree with one another. I felt that there was shouldn't be an impediment to creating another controlled trailhead that would get cars off of Silver Summit Parkway. There'll be more no parking signs. I think there'll probably will be some more effort put into controlling some of the speeding that's been taking place. But we've got an explosive population here, and they're using trails. Round Valley's meant to be used. It's part of the open lands requirements that you create public access. So I don't know that it's too much to have as many access venues as possible, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, the critics, though, did ask you to postpone a decision just so that they could give you more information. You didn't think that that was worth waiting for?
No, and I don't mean that disrespectfully. I felt that the main topic was redundancy and traffic and whether or not there was a need for the use, and I felt like the proposal addressed those questions and satisfied the commission that there was a need. So,
The Planning Commission discussed how to balance the recreation component on the Gilmore property with the desire to preserve the area for wildlife. So explain what you meant when you said that Round Valley is an island in a stream and the stream is us.
Well, when we were doing the general plan, we have a large diagram that shows all of the highways, 80, 40, 224, 248. And obviously in the middle of that is Round Valley. And the preservation of Round Valley, by the nature of it, is it's not pristine, it's not remote, it's really smack in the middle of a lot of urban pressure. And the use of that is for the public. When you use public dollars to preserve open space, the purpose of preserving it was not to maintain it as something that's remote, and it doesn't fit the definition of pristine. So the stream is us because we have access points to it, we use it, and I think that creating trailheads and rules, particularly to protect wildlife, is a necessary evil, I suppose, that the land's there, it's being used anyway. So why not manage it in a responsible manner?
So it's been called the Stone Ridge Trailhead after the development that was proposed there. Some want another name. Do you have any ideas?
I actually thought Stone Ridge was an attractive name. It certainly describes the area. I don't know if there's some maybe feelings left over from the controversy that existed on that area, but I think Stone Ridge is a perfectly good name, and I didn't really have any, I don't have any objections to it.
Well, Commissioner Chuck Klingenstein, I guess tongue-in-cheek, said we should call it Dog Valley, noting that he was recently bit by an unleashed dog there. No?
Guess so.
Other items on the agenda, code amendments to establish that Park City residents can serve on the Planning Commission. No issue there.
I don't think there's an issue. I think they've limited it to three. I mean, I guess I would always err on the side of expanding the available pool of people who want to contribute and who want to serve in the position. And we have a lot of talented people. I'm not sure that a line of demarcation is that necessary. You may live in the city, but you're also in the county. So I again, don't have a problem with it.
All right. Also, the proposal for the Park City Day School in Pinebrook, they want to add 5,500 square feet or six classrooms. They've certainly had some traffic problems, parents dropping off kids sometimes from a queue of cars out onto the street. So have we found a solution to prevent that, or is it just going to get worse?
Well, the principal was there, and that was one of the questions I asked and was addressed in the staff report, and I know other commissioners felt the same way, that the queuing, what kind of mitigation was the school undertaking, and they talked about staggering times and using the bus system, maybe carpooling. I asked if there were incentives the school, frankly, could come up with to encourage parents to maybe not one car per kid. The expansion is really limited, I think, to they're expecting an increase of somewhere around 20 students. I think we've got that right. So to me, that wasn't the traffic study that was proposed contemplated an increase of 60 students, so we're well under the mark, and the engineering, traffic engineering decided or reported that the road could still handle it. So I frankly don't think that they need to expand the lanes. I think that the school is going to take enough steps internally to encourage more efficiency in that. And the queue, maybe if it's 10 minutes long, well, if it gets long enough, I suppose maybe parents themselves will figure out another way to get the kids to school.
Yeah, so was that voluntary then, that the school try and mitigate the situation, or did the Planning Commission put on some conditions of approval?
I don't think the commission, I don't believe we put on additional conditions, but the staff report, you know, they did talk about each of those factors and what the studies were. So I think the school is under an agreement with staff that they certainly are going to take internal measures, but we weren't going to micromanage within the school.
All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No. I appreciate being here. Thank you for the time.
All right. That's the new vice chair of Snyderville Basin Planning Commission, B. Peck. KPCW News Time now, 8:43. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Public comment for the first phase of a Mountain Accord ends on Friday. In the studio, to encourage you to go online and make your comments, I have Recreation Systems Group co-chair Michael Brill, along with Recreation Systems Group member Julie Geisler. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Morning.
So just mountainaccord.com, .org to...
.org, I believe it is.
we'll
but,
look.
But yeah, I think the part that we want to encourage is that people really dig into the blueprint proposals at this point in a fair amount of detail, because this is the time to do that, and particularly on some of the items that are not getting a lot of attention, like some of the preservation aspects. And so there is a tab for federal land designations that I think people would find interesting, and there's a tab for a Cottonwood Canyons update that talks about some of the land swaps that would result in additional trails and preservation that I think also people should spend a little time with.
Yeah, so why is it important that people have a say by Friday? Because there's still a lot more to do, no?
I think right now, Leslie, there's a lot of negativity about Mountain Accord in the planning process, and I think people need to become brought into accord with Mountain Accord, because if you step away from this planning process, you inherently silence your own voice. So if you like things, you don't like things in the proposal right now, now's the time to speak out so that you can shape what the proposal looks like next.
All right. So both Park City and Summit County governments are considering whether to continue with the process. It seems to have a lot more to do with the Wasatch Front than the Wasatch Back. I mean, why do you think it's important that we pay up? Because you got to pay to stay at the table, right?
Yeah, I think that is part of the game. But, you know, I think in terms of answering why we should stay at the table, the status quo of all of our individual communities kind of doing their own thing and not looking at how they're interconnected has not resulted in environmental improvements or in additional recreation connections or in more responsible parameters for growth. And so I think that's the true benefit of this particular exercise is looking at it as a system that's broader than our individual jurisdictions and seeing if there's some improvements that we can make that way.
Yeah, any comment from you in terms of why it's important to stay on?
Sure. So I think as an opportunity for preservation, this is the first time we've looked at the Wasatch as a forest instead of, as Mike's saying, individual jurisdictions. And that is where the opportunity lies for preservation and for planning, is to look at it as a forest and not just as the Wasatch Front, the Wasatch Back, Alta, Snow, you know. Look at it as the forest.
And I think that also brings in some additional possibilities for funding at the federal level, some additional opportunities for land designation, for the state and federal forest management areas to be involved, and so the opportunity to make a bigger impact that way, too.
Yeah, I mean, what we hear from the proponents of Mountain Accord, that it is first and foremost about preservation. But what is it preserving?
I think the simplest answer is those places that we all like to go out and hike and backcountry ski and climb and enjoy. And hopefully adding some private land designation, some recreational and protection designations to some areas that are currently private, which is part of the trade-offs that are discussed in those tabs I was mentioning earlier.
Yeah. So without Mountain Accord, though, it would just be done piecemeal? Is that the concern?
We continue to fight. We continue to fight over ski resort expansion. So instead of continuing that fight, let's come to the table, find a solution, and make a federal land designation so that fight is over and we preserve what's there. We preserve the balance that is there.
Mm-hmm. You've said in some of the opportunities and potential benefits that you've laid out, Julia, that Mountain Accord will stop ski resort expansion. But don't the land swaps between the federal government and the resorts allow more resort-based development? It certainly would protect the upper reaches.
Mike, you might be able to speak more to that than I can.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are trade-offs in all elements of this proposal, and some additional density at the base areas is something that's on the table in order for there to be some private land designation in those recreational areas and environmentally sensitive areas. But I think so far the assessment has been, even from the recreational and environmental groups, that those are trade-offs worth evaluating.
Yeah, and there's a lot of unknowns as well in the proposal, such as the expansion into American Forks, Snowbird's interest there, and I think we ask in our comments from the Salt Lake Climbers Alliance for more information about what that looks like.
Yeah. At the same time, doing that swap from the upper reaches to the base of the resorts, that eliminates any chance of building chairlifts to connect the resorts. I mean, is that a decision that you're both ready to sign off on?
Given the way that these proposals have been arrived at with resort input and with industry input from folks like Ski Utah, I have some confidence that if that's where we end up with the final proposal, that it's going to come with the right trade-offs for those entities to be successful as well.
And I think for recreation and preservation, a lot of focus has been in the Upper Canyon and Upper Little Cottonwood Canyon. But again, this is a forest-wide planning process. So there's the front, there's the back, there's Lower Little Cottonwood Canyon. That is also receiving attention, but it's not getting the amount of exposure that maybe it should, because there is that in the proposal as well. Right. Plans for trail connectivity and plans for better designated parking for dispersed users, things like that that don't really get highlighted as much when people talk about Mountain Accord planning process.
Yeah, and as I've mentioned, you're both part of that recreation systems group. How did the group feel about the proposed tunnels?
I think there's the same level of consternation within that group as is reflected in the broader community. And so I think there's some that feel like maybe that's the right trade-off as opposed to over the snow or over ridgeline in order to protect view sheds and limit wildlife impacts and impacts to backcountry recreation areas. But I think there are others that equally have concerns about, kind of the environmental impacts of those kinds of solutions. And at the end of the day, I think some of these things that are on the table still are on the table so that we do have more time to gather additional information through environmental studies, through economic studies, and really understand where the trade-offs really ought to be in the end proposal.
And, alignments and the type of mass transit is unknown, and that's why people should get online and comment on what they like, what they don't like, and stay at the table and meet with consultants and show them the resources that are out there that we're concerned about.
And I think Julia keeps saying what you like and what you don't like, and I think that's a really important distinction. It's much easier to say what you don't like. You can react more quickly. It takes a little more time, a little more effort to dig in and read through what might be there that you do like or what you want to support or what might be a better alternative solution. But that's what we really need people to do at this point, is put some good ideas on the table.
Yeah. And I guess, did you guys have this argument as the recreation systems group? Because you would think about it, chairlifts seem to be a little bit more recreation-minded than tunnels.
there was some discussion about it, and to some people, like resort skiers, you're right, those lifts are more recreation oriented. To people who like backcountry skiing in a pristine environment without side country skiers competing on those powder days, or who just want quiet enjoyment while hiking during the summer without that additional sort of development influence, they don't agree on those issues.
And I think until further study is done with the environmental scorecard, for example, people are stepping back a little bit and looking at the bigger picture and what we want to get out of this process, which is preservation, which is, you know, greater trail connectivity and things that we're interested in. So instead of getting into the nitty-gritty before the details are known, taking a bigger perspective on the process and on the planning process, I think, is important for all of our groups at the table.
Yeah. So have you been reading the comments as they've come in? And have any of those kind of changed your mind at the way you're looking at things? Or
What we tend to get is a blended synopsis of the comments with sort of major topic areas that are being reflected, and those have been helpful, I think, in understanding where the broader community is. And yeah, they do influence, at least my opinion. Now, neither Julia or I are at the executive level where we're really making decisions about these things, but I think both of us feel compelled to relay what we're hearing from the folks that we're in contact with, and add that to the mix. But again, there's this individual ability to do that through the Accord website and through the upcoming sort of public comment periods that'll be part of the phase two planning.
And I guess that's when it first started, it was like, well, we're just going to do the first phase, mm-hmm. and we're going to see. I mean, it sounds like we're pretty committed to a second phase.
If everybody stays at the table, which hopefully everybody will, because that's really the benefit, is being able to sit down in this group and hear people's concerns and come up with solutions.
Right.
And I think also there's, you know, when you get into environmental impact statements and those kinds of things that go into some of the transportation planning that's being proposed, that's likely to happen whether there's a mountain accord process to help direct it or not. And so I think it's better that we have this regular sort of framework for getting together and hearing people's comments that can help inform those processes as well.
To keep people involved and at the table, ongoing, not just this phase one, but through phase two, through environmental analysis. It will all need public input.
All right. Again, the deadline, though, to submit things about the proposed blueprint that we've got, that's Friday, mountainaccord.com. Mountainaccord.com is where people need to go to do that.
And there's a lot of great organizations out there that you can go on to guide your comments. SaltLakeClimbers.org has a list of bullet points that help guide your comments. Save Our Canyons, the city of Park City, on and on.
Summit Land Conservancy has been participating as well and have representatives at the table. So whoever you're most involved with in your local daily life, use that outlet.
All right. Julia Geisler, Michael Burrill, members of the Systems Group with the Mountain Accord. Thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's 8:55. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, you've likely heard his voice here on KPCW for years. Underwriting on the station is the owner for Foothill Oriental Rugs. Jim Weber is also the founder of the Nepal Cleft and Burn Center, a place, of course, devastated by an earthquake on Saturday and a resulting avalanche on Mount Everest, and now a landslide. In 2002, Jim established the Nepal Cleft and Burn Center. It opened last year. Its mission, to build Nepal's first teaching hospital specializing in deformity-correcting reconstructive surgery. A fundraiser to help support that center will be held this Friday at his rug store on Foothill Drive in Salt Lake City. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the center is in Kathmandu, and was it spared by the earthquake?
The center is in Kathmandu, and frankly, I was really worried about it because it's built on the side of a hill. But it was built right. It was engineered and done by a very capable architect, and it's totally intact.
Right.
And up and running, I need to say, because, boy, I'll tell you, they really need it now.
Yeah. No doubt you have many contacts there, and I know communication is difficult given all of the devastation, but what have you found out about the area?
Well, I think most of the damage was localized to a few areas. Most of the Kathmandu Valley was not hit very hard. I think the epicenter of the quake was about 50 miles northwest of Kathmandu.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I guess as you go back, I mean, it's going to be a very different place than from what you know, huh?
I'm sure it will be. I was there 3 weeks ago, and I'm sure the next time I go back, it will be a very different place. I know, after 2 days, I finally got communication from our lead physician in the Nepal Clefton Burn Center, and his email to me was really powerful. It basically said, Jim, luckily I was making my rounds when it happened, and by the end of the day, we had more than 100 patients in our hospital, 10 arrived dead. We're doing all I can to take care of them.
All right. Well, you've got a fundraiser coming up Friday night, 6 o'clock. It's your Foothill Oriental Rugs there on Foothill Drive. People can, what, $95 tickets?
And $95 ticket. You'll get a really good dinner. You'll have a really open bar. I think people who come to this event have a really good time. It's in an interesting venue. It's in my rug store, so you're surrounded by beautiful handmade textiles. And this is really our main fundraising vehicle of the year. We're just a small nonprofit located in Salt Lake. I mean, we're the very definition of grassroots, and this fundraiser is a huge part of our income every year.
All right. You'll be showing a documentary?
We'll be showing a documentary film that was done last year, because after 13 years working on this project, we actually had the grand opening of the Nepal Clefton Burn Center in March of last year, and we have a documentary that really puts you right in the middle of what we're doing there. In fact, you can view the documentary on the homepage of our website, www.nepalcleftandburncenter.org.
All right. So the center itself, I mean, while you call it the Clefton Burn Center, right now you're just a first aid station, it sounds like.
Well, there are a lot of burns as a result of this earthquake, mm-hmm. and but my doctor, our lead physician, Dr. Shankar Rai, told me that the majority of what they're doing is orthopedic stuff. So yes, we will not turn anyone away, and we're definitely a key component of the medical infrastructure to treat these earthquake victims.
Yeah. Is he going to be able to be out here for the fundraiser?
He was scheduled to come, but he's not now.
He's got his
work. Yeah, he's definitely needed in Nepal.
All right. How do people get tickets?
Call my rug store, 801-582-3500, and RSVP, and you can pay at the door, or we can take your credit card over the phone.
Yeah. So you've raised the money to take to burn the center. Now this is really about just keeping it operating, huh?
Keeping it operating, and actually, we're going to announce at this fundraiser that we're building our second hospital in southeastern Nepal. It's in a geographical area called Terai, and we're going to build our second unit, which is really exciting.
Well, congratulations on the opening, and boy, good luck with the future here.
Thank you, and I just want to say that we're the definition of a grassroots nonprofit. 96% of the money we raise goes to the project.
Great. Jim, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you very much.
It's Jim Weber. KPCW News Time now, 9 o'clock.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.